This is the Motley Fool Radio Show with David Gardner, and here to provide some additional perspective on the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina is Fool Radio economics contributor Charlie Whelan. He joins us from the NPR Bureau in Chicago. Charlie, welcome back.
Good to be with you.
Charlie, according to a congressional report out this week, the damage from Hurricane Katrina could include up to 400,000 lost jobs and slower U.S. growth. And some estimates are that the overall cost of Katrina could be 10 times that of September 11th. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's a huge supply shock, meaning that it's just disrupted our capacity to do all kinds of things that are either happening in New Orleans, passed through New Orleans, got fuel from New Orleans, or so on. I mean, if you were to do a comparison to your own personal life, if you went into your office and took six keys out of the keyboard and took down your internet connection and cut the phone lines and then said, okay, how productive are you going to be? That's kind of the equivalent to what's happening to the nation. We've just disrupted our ability to make goods and services, obviously highly concentrated in that part of the country, but it's going to radiate throughout the rest of the United States and the world.
We've read that there are 6 degrees of separation between all humans or less. Sounds like you're saying, Charlie, there's actually just 1, 2, or 3 degrees of separation between us and a whole bunch of stuff out there in our economy.
Particularly when you start talking about fuel prices, you know, we've already had this summer of the rising gas prices, and then you get this on top of it. But I've seen an article, I think it was an article in the New York Times, saying that already behavior is beginning to change. People are starting to consider carpools. The same people who used to talk about how important it was to have their time alone in the vehicle. Well, all of those things are kind of indirectly tied to the fact we've disrupted oil capacity, we've disrupted our ability to refine gas, prices adjust, and suddenly somebody who's never been to New Orleans is changing their behavior, at least in part as a result of what's happened down there.
We've now heard a bunch of different estimates about the real effect of Katrina. We've read where federal government spending could reach $150 billion. President Bush asking for an additional $51 billion package this week. What effect does that type of government spending have on the economy? How significant is it?
It is fairly significant, and it will have a positive effect. It's not going to start right away. Some of it will, I suppose. But as soon as you start rebuilding things and you're going to be putting contractors back to work, as soon as you start paying people, giving them relief money, they're going to turn around and spend it in retail stores and so on. There will be a problem, however, in that there's still going to be a mismatch between the people who need help the most and those who are helped most by the rebuilding effort. If I'm a contractor based out of Baton Rouge, I probably wasn't doing too badly before. I may take on a couple employees and so on, and those may have been people who were affected by the hurricane. But if you, say, run a bed and breakfast in New Orleans and it's been washed away, until it's rebuilt and until the tourist trade comes back, you're still going to be in a really tough spot. So there's no doubt that the rebuilding effort will start putting money in people's pockets. They will be spending it, which encourages other economic activity, but it is certainly not a cure-all, particularly for the people who were most adversely affected.
Now, Charlie, in light of Katrina, we know you're itching to talk a little bit about the proper role of government. We're certainly not Al Franken. We're certainly not Bill O'Reilly on this show. And I know you're not either. From the economist's perspective, what are the different schools of thought on the proper role of government here?
Well, I think what's most curious about this is neither Al Franken or Bill O'Reilly are economists. And I think that's part of the problem, actually. If you took their economic equivalents, if you took Milton Friedman and, say, Paul Krugman on the left, and you brought them together, they would actually agree to a great extent on the basic role of government. In other words, what does basic economics tell us about the things that government must do in order to make an economy work better? And there are really three basic things. One is it needs to maintain and enforce the rules of the game. So people often say government just needs to get out of my way and my business will work better. But they say that assuming that they have a sound currency and a legal system and police to protect them from someone stealing things from their store and so on. So I often say that government kind of provides the tracks on which the engine of capitalism runs. You need certain infrastructure and other rule of law kinds of things that make it work. The second is that government deals with what economists call externalities, which is just kind of a fancy way of saying when I do something in my economic interest that makes you worse off. So if I were running a big coal plant and on the adjacent property you were bottling water, the Motley Fool brand drinking water, and my coal dust is polluting your water, we've got a problem, in part because there's nothing about your damage to your goods that I'm going to take into account in my decisions about producing coal. So somehow we have to remediate that problem. And then last, government provides public goods. And public goods are not, as it may sound, anything the government happens to buy. They're things that have two important characteristics, one of which is that it's just as cheap to provide it to lots of people as it is to one. So a perfect example would be the levees around New Orleans. It's not any more expensive to build a levee that protects 100,000 people than it is to build it and protect one. And the second important thing is that it's almost impossible to exclude anybody who doesn't pay for that from its benefit. So a perfect example would be national defense. If you and I live next to each other after we've reconciled our factory problems, and I say, you know, David, I'm thinking about putting in an anti-missile system. Would you like to contribute? You're going to say, wisely, no, you know, I really don't want to chip in, knowing full well that my missile system is going to knock down anything that would also hurt your house. And therefore, we often go, government will often coercively collect taxes to pay for these goods to prevent people from free riding. So those are fairly technical things, and they leave lots of room for argument. But nonetheless, those, I would say, are prerequisites for a healthy economy. And I don't know what Al Franken or Bill O'Reilly would say about that, but most economists, I think, would agree with everything I've just said.
And one thing I didn't hear you say is that the federal government should come in and regulate the price of gas. I'm sure a lot of us would, in a fantasy world, love to think that our government could save us from higher gas prices. And darn it, let's just mandate $1.25 at the pumps. That's been tried before. What happens, and why should government not control pricing?
I think you're absolutely right. That same group of economists that I've convened would almost all say that you shouldn't do that, because an economy full of rational people is a little like a balloon. If you think you're going to fix the problem by pushing in one part, you're just going to get a bulge somewhere else. And we certainly see that if you try and regulate prices, because if you regulate them too cheaply, meaning that basically gas is less expensive than its real cost, then people use too much of it. And if they use too much of it and you've got a relative shortage, then you're going to run out. And that's why you see long queues in cases where people have tried to artificially regulate the price. And actually, elsewhere around the world, this is a lesson that folks are learning rather expensively. They've priced gasoline too cheaply in some countries, in some cases 7 or 10 cents, and as a result, people are using too much of it. So most economists, as you pointed out, would say that's not a proper role of government, to basically intervene in a way that distorts a market price.
Charlie, one company that's gotten a lot of praise for its handling of the hurricane is Walmart. Walmart has donated $20 million in cash, 1,500 truckloads of free merchandise, food for 100,000 meals. Walmart has promised a job for every one of its displaced workers. What do you make of Walmart's initiative? Let's say you are a Walmart shareholder. Are you happy or, for some reason, unhappy about this?
You know, as a Walmart shareholder, which I'm not, I would actually be happy for a couple of reasons. One is there's nothing preventing me from having an altruistic impulse saying, you know, I'm comfortable sharing part of what might have been my dividend with some larger cause. The second reason is more self-serving, which is that Walmart, as you know, has gone through kind of a rough patch on the public relations front. They've had labor issues. There's been talk about their effect on communities and so on. And I think it's probably a good PR move. It's a substantive PR move. I think it's all for the good. But it actually also, I think, could come back and help Walmart.
Charlie Whelan is the author of Naked Economics, Undressing the Dismal Science. We also understand he's a pretty darn popular professor at the University of Chicago. Charlie, thanks for joining us on the Motley Fool Radio Show.
Thank you for having me.